Here's Larry Weissman of USA Today.
Well, I think it's part of what goes on with Nick Saban. You know, people who follow this Alabama thing from the inside out, people who have known him over time, know that Nick loves something more than coaching, and it's money. And that's what this came down to. That's what it was all about. You know, I don't want to sit in judgment or anything, but if he told me it was raining, I'm pretty sure I would stand up.
Well, to finish that quote, he said he'd stand out in the rain, even if Nick Saban said it was raining, he'd wait till he got soaking wet to believe it. So, you know, this money thing at Alabama, you're putting the onus more on Alabama, more on the colleges that subscribe to this issue of throwing money at coaches that is the biggest prime mover in the process?
No question. We've always said, and we continue to say, and we've talked about it on this show and other instances, the influence of money is a part of what makes the college athletics have some of the problems that it has. It's the reason that Congress is sticking their nose into wanting to know what goes on. It's the reason that people make bad decisions about academic fraud and recruiting scandals and player eligibility and what grades they're going to what classes they're going to take, because people are chasing that holy grail, that brass ring. And in Alabama's case, they've made a very powerful statement about the priority that they put on football vis-a-vis everything else that goes on in Alabama and what they're willing to do in order to have a winning football team. So by its very nature, they're sending a message to their faculty, to their staff, to their players, to their rest of their student body population about how they prioritize and what's important to them.
And when you have the head of the NCAA saying that coaches' salaries are the number one issue, what is the NCAA doing in terms of a substantive strategy to require university presidents and athletic directors to make sure that that message does not overcome or damage the priority, the prime responsibility to make sure these young men are prepared for life as a total lifetime of achievement, not just through sports?
Well, I mean, I think the NCAA is in a tough spot because they can't mandate what people pay, because now you start having collusion and restriction of trade and all that sort of stuff, and they can get into trouble. And I'm not suggesting in any way that coaches shouldn't take the money that's on the table. It's a market economy, and if you have a product to sell and there are takers out there, you sell it to the highest bidder. I have no issue with Nick Saban and whether he's worthy of it or any of that stuff. The issue really lies with the leadership on the college campuses, and they have to realize that every time you make a decision like this, you send a powerful message to the rest of your community about what's really important. So what I mean by that is, when a kid might be struggling in school and he's trying to stay eligible to play another year or another game or whatever, the urge and the influence of deciding, does he cheat, does he try to get help that's not appropriate, does he plagiarize, whatever, starts to creep in. And if he's starting to feel like, well, geez, if they're going to pay somebody $4 million, they must be able to understand the pressure that I'm feeling to have to do what I have to do to stay eligible. The same thing with the coach is feeling like, geez, we have to compete at a certain level, so maybe I shouldn't be talking to this kid because it's a violation, but I'm going to do it anyway because we have a chance to get him, and then we go to a major bowl game. You see where I'm going with that? And that's hard to rein back in when you've made these kinds of decisions to pay this kind of money.
Is it possible to find a silver lining, the fact that a Nick Saban is saying, you know, I tried it for 2 years as a head coach in the NFL, and it's the college experience, it's the more human connection with these more moldable young people that's more important to me. Isn't that a positive thing?
It is a positive thing from the standpoint of, you're talking to somebody, as you know, that benefited greatly from his college experience. We both went to Dartmouth College and played collegiate athletics, and in my case, I had a coach that really had a profound impact on my life, and I'm still using the lessons that I learned from all those years of playing for him in college. So I'm the first person to say that coaches that really understand their role as educators and leaders of people can have a profound impact, and kudos to folks that see themselves as educators at the college level. The problem is, you still are sending a powerful message to everybody involved when you're going to say that we value football so much, winning football games is so important, that we're willing to invest $32 million plus over 8 years to bring somebody in to do that.
Guaranteed.
guaranteed, no questions asked, and in some cases there's rumor that he's even going to get bonuses for winning some of the bigger bowl games. And you know, you have to scratch your head and ask yourself, how can you have any more bonuses on top of a salary like that, when I would have thought that the reason that you're hiring somebody is because you expect to get to those bowl games in the first place.
Well, John Clayton is already saying that if Bill Cowher, who is announcing as we speak that he won't return to Pittsburgh after 15 glorious years, will probably take a year off, somewhat like his mentor Marty Schottenheimer did and came back and coached better than ever, that the $6.5 million he could have gotten in Pittsburgh would be $8 million in a year and a half. So $4 million a year is still one half of what they're saying the market's going to be. So the money keeps going up, and it's not going to turn around. My question, final question to you, Peter, is if money's not going to turn around and this becomes, you know, unalterably part of the process, what, I'm going to ask the same question again. What can the NCAA do? What can you do? What can all of us do to make sure that the institutions whose prime responsibility is to raise these people as complete people, because even if they make it in the NFL, they're going to play 3, 4, 5 years.
Right.
What are they doing about it?
Well, I think what we have to do is, like what we were talking with our young person, Ryan, before, we have to prepare the kids at that level. We have to prepare them before they ever get to college so that they've already started to think about keeping a balance with academics and athletics, and that they're looking at being the best person they can be so they can take full advantage of all the opportunities provided to them. And if they are lucky enough to go to the pros, they still can be the kind of person that will give back to the community and raise a family and be a productive member of society, because it's the concern is that the focus on what's important at the college level is going to be more about playing football or playing basketball than it is about being prepared to go on to the next phase of your life. So we better start pushing that down into middle school and high school.
Call 800-878-7529, 800-878-7529, to talk with us about this, your own experience as a player, as a coach, as a parent. Peter Robey, Center for the Study of Sport and Society, you are A1 first class in what you're doing in this movement. We really appreciate it. Thanks for joining
us. Thank you, Nick. Always a pleasure being with you.
Thank you, sir. Moving on to Dr. Andrew Jacobs. Andy, you've been listening patiently. What's your comment on this?
Well, I think when you look at the whole issue of sports today, Nick, I think the biggest problem really revolves around money. And, you know, Nick Saban leaving the Dolphins to go back to college, a lot of people are very critical of him. But people change jobs all the time. And, you know, he had the right to do that if he wanted to. Of course, the issue comes down to younger kids about obligations and commitments, and we can talk about all this as much as we want. I think the real issue comes down to this. When you take a job, are you willing to stick it out to the end till your contract's over with? I think a lot of people are willing to do that in the NFL and college, wherever. At the same time, you know, things do change. People change their minds. People's attitudes change. A lot of things get, you know, become different, and in terms of people's attitudes and perspectives. And so what happens is, you know, I think for Nick Saban, he's going to be criticized by people in Southern Florida from now to kingdom come for deserting the Dolphins. I know Don Shula came out
after two years. I'm sorry. Yeah, things change, but there's such a thing as commitment. And Don Shula is somebody I'm going to respect, even if it was colored by the fact that his own son, who, you know, his son went, Dave Shula, went to Dartmouth with me, so I've got to mention that as well for full disclosure. But, you know, he was the predecessor at Alabama, but he felt like, here's a guy who's giving up his commitment after 2 years. Fred Eng, you're down there in Florida. How's it strike you?
Wow, now you're getting into my home territory. So obviously, Nick, I got a lot of comments about it. But, you know, I think the thing is that there's a couple things about it. One, in the papers here and everywhere in the country, it talks about he lied, you know, and whatever. But people forget in the past, you know, how many times have all of us seen this happen at the professional ranks? I mean, what do they expect a guy to do when all of a sudden he feels that this is over for him and he knows he's going to go to Alabama or somewhere in the college ranks? Is he supposed to say right in the middle of the season, hey, I'm telling you guys, I'm going to leave here, and it ain't going to happen. It never has happened. Anytime you've ever read, they always keep it a secret. But, you know, the fact that he's been offered that money, should he be the scapegoat for all of this? I mean, money is money at the professional level, but the real bottom line to me is the fact that how many times have you seen college coaches come in and they go into the professional ranks and they can't cope with all of that. These are apples and oranges, dealing with college kids and then professional people, and Nick Saban couldn't deal with it. All you had to do is look at Dante Culpepper. Dante Culpepper came down there, started for the three or four games, and he was unbelievably lousy. That's where Nick Saban failed, and he knew it because he should have taken him out, should have never put him in the beginning, and he was a bad coach at the pro level. Now he's starting all over again, and he's gone, and that's the way the community should feel. Start all over again.
Fred, let me ask you a question, because last year, if I remember correctly, Nick Saban was very hard on a young man, I believe an offensive lineman, and this young man, if I remember correctly, was crying after a practice. And Saban was all over him about that.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't believe that really is the situation that happened. It was an individual because of his own weakness emotionally. I don't think it was anything that Saban did. Never has there been any reports of he really was his tough coach. I think he found out he can't deal with professional athletes because they all make all this money, and he can't deal with them at that level. That's why he's gone.
It's much more complicated. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk some more about this and also more about the idea, in addition to money, of recruiting. Because, in essence, when you're given a scholarship, you're getting somewhere between $100,000 and $200,000 of commitment. It's perverting the process. It's also corrupting the way that parents are raising their kids through sports. We'll be right back with Fred Ang and Dr. Andrew Jacobs on Head Games on Sports Byline and Sirius Channel 122. Stay